must be lights burning brighter somewhere. Got to be birds flying higher in a sky more blue. If I can dream of a better land where all my brothers walk hand in hand, tell me why. Oh, why? Oh, why can't my dream come true? Oh, why? There must be peace and understanding sometime. Strong winds of promise that will blow away the doubt and fear. If I can dream of a warmer sun where hope keeps shining on everyone, tell me why. Oh, why? Oh, why won't that sun appear? We're lost in a cloud with too much rain. We're trapped in a world that's troubled with pain. But as long as a man has the strength to dream, he can redeem his soul and fly. Deep in my heart, there's a trembling question. Still I am sure that the answer's gonna come somehow. Out there in the dark, there's a beckoning candle, yeah. And while I can think, while I can talk, while I can stand, while I can walk, while I can dream,
everyone. This is Mary Sutherland, BUFO Radio at BurlingtonNews.net. Tonight we're going to be talking on the sacred feminine and the world we live in today, and how that new energy applies. And we, like I said, we're speaking with Karen Tate, and we want to say hi to you, Karen, right
hi.
Now.
Hi, Mary. Hi, listeners. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And your website is?
KarenTate.com, KarenTate. Not to be confused with Sharon Tate, but if that helps you remember me.
You know, as a matter of fact, that name's been going through my head ever since I said, you know, your name, and I was thinking, Sharon Tate, where have I heard that before? Now I remember that was in that. Yeah, we definitely don't want to mix you up with with that little incident there, do we?
No.
Yeah. Now, you also have a radio show.
I do.
Two of them, as a matter of fact, right?
Yeah, it's on Wednesday nights. It's called Voices of the Sacred Feminine, and I have men and women on the show that talk about the sacred feminine, whether that be from the perspective of a deity, an archetype, or like role model, or an ideal, you know, new values for society. And if everything goes well, it looks like I might be starting a second show called Earth's Sacred Places, and we'll be talking about sacred places around the world, but I don't have a start date for that yet.
Uh-huh. Okay, and again, your website is KarenTate.com.
That's right, uh-huh.
KarenTate.
Yeah, and people can get information about the radio shows or my two books or lectures or just information about the sacred feminine. There's lots of articles and links and can, it'll start you off to educate you about this, if this is something new to you.
And your books, again, are?
Well, the first one was Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, and that talks about the global presence of a feminine face of God around the world from 30,000 years ago to Goddess. And the second book was more experiential than fact-filled. It's called Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth. And it talks about how someone from the mainstream world can start to understand the sacred feminine. And if you relate to this, just simple ways to start to incorporate these ideas into your life. It also includes some sacred journeys I've taken, you know, to places around the world, rituals, the politics of spirituality, meditations, prayers, all sorts of things. It's actually won an award. It was a finalist in the general spirituality category in an award. It's called National Best Books of 2008. So I was real happy about that. And both books were actually endorsed by the Joseph Campbell Foundation. So, you know, that's a thumbs up.
Joseph Campbell. He wrote quite a lot on mythology, right?
Yeah, he did. You know, he talked about how important mythology is in our life. You know, how it, how rituals and icons and all of that are so important to our psyche, to our subconscious mind. And, he, in later in life, when he started to discover this idea of the sacred feminine from Maria Gimbutas, he said that he was sorry he hadn't discovered it earlier in his, in his career as a mythologist, because he realized what an important impact it would have had on our societies across the globe.
And he also had contributed a lot to, Steven Spielberg?
Yeah,
with Star Wars?
I believe so.
I think that Steven was one of his friends or something that spent a lot of time on his ranch or something and inspired him.
That could be. I mean, I think the Star Wars trilogy is, maybe sort of synonymous with sort of the hero's journey. You know, it was sort of paralleled some of the mythological themes.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, so we spoke on your first book, and then you said that the second book was what again?
It's Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth, and that's the more experiential one explains to people, what the sacred feminine is, and if they relate to it, you know, how they can incorporate those ideals or spirituality within their life.
And now, how is this applying today with this new energy?
Well, it's actually resurging, quite frankly. It's been sort of there, dormant, on the fringes of society, for decades now. But I'd say probably in the last 10 years, it really seems to be coming out there more into the center of the world. For instance, in Dan Brown's book, The Da Vinci Code, he sort of cracked the door on the idea of the sacred feminine. Also, too, just recently, Sumo Kid, she wrote a book, Secret Life of Bees, which sold millions of copies. It was translated into 32 languages. And at the heart of this book was a black Madonna. And the black Madonnas, or dark Madonnas, are aspects of the sacred feminine as well. Progressive Christians are actually starting to look for a feminine face of God. And it's, given the Pope heart failures, kidding there, he's not having any health problems, but it's certainly a thorn in his side, because he started to actually come out publicly against this sort of theology. He's told his congregations where the priests on the local level are changing their liturgy to include not just God, but Goddess, not just the father but the mother, that the church won't recognize this. You know, they're very misogynist. They're very anti-female. And it goes back to the very beginning. And, you know, that's part of all of this. And, you know, and it's had ramifications on society. The, you know, the major patriarchal religions are not very kind to the female gender. They've never been. And consequently today, you know, women can't be ordained as priests. You know, you have this idea that, you know, women are second class to men, and, you know, women should obey their husbands. And, but then it, you know, you see the ramifications of it in bigger ways too. You know, we have female genital mutilation, we have bride burning, domestic violence, pornography. It all comes back to not, seeing the feminine as sacred, as seeing it as less than the male. It's a big subject, you know, and I'm sort of just, you know, hitting on little pieces of it, you know, right now. But one thing that you will notice is recently, for instance, in the presidential campaign, people responded to the message of Barack Obama. Now, whether or not he identifies it as such or realizes it even, his manner and his message are ideals of the sacred feminine. It's, you know, because his, you know, what he talks about is social justice. Well, that's what the sacred feminine's about, too. He talks about the ideas of, you know, of equality, of the needs of the many rather than the needs of the few. Again, you know, these are things that are sacred feminine ideals. You know, people are tired of war. They're tired of domination by, you know, choosing to dominate or control people, you know, out of necessity. Out of choice rather than necessity. And that's about the sacred feminine, too. The sacred feminine isn't about domination and power over. It's about collaboration. It's about negotiation. It's about two people coming into a negotiation, and we don't leave with one a loser and one a winner. Both come out with something. You know, so these are just, you know, some of the different ideas if you look at goddess or the sacred feminine as archetype, like a role model, or, you know, or new ideals or values. But then, you know, we also have all of this evidence that actually goes back 30,000 years of a feminine face of God. And there are a lot of people in this country that don't even realize that. You know, I grew up in New Orleans in the Bible Belt. My family was Catholic. And it wasn't until I was 30 years old I discovered this when I moved to California. Some people don't even realize that there was a feminine face of God and that she was worshipped 30,000 years ago, long before a male God ever was.
Yeah, I'm from Wisconsin, so I can relate to that very much. So,
well, I know there are a lot of groups in Wisconsin, you know, around the colleges, Madison. There are a lot of groups there that are very much into the idea of the sacred feminine.
Well, Madison, of course, is a very, very open town. It always has been.
Right,
you know, because
right.
That's our capital city here.
Right.
But you get out into the rural areas, you know, and then it was a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's like that every place. It really is. You know, where there's more education, people are more aware of these things and more open to, you know, learning about, you know, the history and what's been swept under the rug. It's not quite so scary. I know still even in New Orleans, you know, some of these more conservative places, you know, this is like heresy, but it really isn't. I mean, this is just true history, and anybody can find it if they look, you know, if they look in the right books, they take the right college curriculums, they go to the museum, you know. It's all right there. You just have to open your eyes.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, and you also see it, the feminine energy, in the workplace.
Yeah, actually.
In politics now, too.
Well, in politics.
Besides with what you said about Obama.
Yeah, and even, for instance, what's going on right now, if I could, you know, make an analogy. I mean, he's got all the political clout right now. He's got 70 or 80% of the country behind him. He has the votes to pass just about whatever he wants. But is he steamrolling over the Republicans like Bush steamrolled over the Democrats? No. He's reaching out a hand to them. He's asking them to unclench their fists. You know, he's trying to make concessions to them. This is the collaboration. This is the negotiation. You know, he isn't, you know, and I think when it comes to world politics, too, he's not going to drop bombs on people first and ask questions later. And he certainly isn't going to drop bombs on countries that, you know, weren't even responsible for our misery. So, you know, it's about all of these different ways of being. You know, gone will be the days of domination, oppression. You know, in fact, there's some, I don't know if you're familiar with Matthew Fox, but he's a famous priest that was excommunicated by the church quite a while ago because of his he advocated these ideals and the sacred feminine as well. He's written about 28 books. I just had him on my radio show a week or two ago, and he's writing a great book right now called Men's Spirituality, talking about giving men different role models and different archetypes for how to be in the world. Instead of having archetypes as warriors or aggressors or, you know, this machismo, you know, that men feel they have to embody, you know, he's given them different role models so that they can, you know, understand that, you know, they can be different. You know, it doesn't have to be about war and domination and power over. We don't want a survival of the fittest world anymore.
The we have a call or a listener in from Chicago.
Sure.
Speaking about archetypes, has a question. Is there an association between male and female energy and what we call the left and right brain archetypes?
Oh, well, absolutely, yeah. First of all, I want to make clear that, you know, there's a lot of disinformation out there that people who are advocates of the sacred feminine want to obliterate God. You know, they want women to run the world. You know, that's all fallacies. That's all disinformation, you know, put out by people who don't know what they're talking about or who want to misinform. You know, this is about trying to balance the male and the female energies. And it also ties into the idea of left brain thinking and right brain thinking. Traditionally, it's thought that, you know, men are more left brain thinking and women are more right brain thinking. And, you know, in our patriarchal society, it's been left brain thinking has been more valued. You know, it's the more linear thinking. It's again about some of these qualities I mentioned, the masculine qualities of, you know, domination, control, where women are more about, you know, compassion, nurturing, wisdom, intuition, you know, these different things. Well, the reality is we don't want one or the other. We want to marry the two.
Exactly.
And, you know, in fact, you know, sometimes when I'm given talks, you know, I'll say, you know what, if you need a vision, think of God and Goddess sitting on their cosmic throne, you know, together, side by side, in equality. And, you know, they're sitting there scratching their heads and they're saying, what in the world did our kids down there, talking about us mortals here on Earth, what ever got into their head, wife? Why did they kick you to the curb? We were never divorced, you know? And, you know, it gets a laugh sometimes. But that's the reality of it. You know, we need the feminine to temper the masculine. We need to look at everything through the left and the right brain, because that's about wholeness. That's about balance. And that's what we're all striving for. That's more of the sacred feminine thinking, the wholeness, the balance, the two coming together in equality as one.
It's the reunion of the bride and groom, preparing the, right now we're preparing the bridal chamber. for that reunion.
Well, you know, you remind me of some of the work of Margaret Starbird. There are a lot of Christians and non-Christians who like her work. She wrote the book A Woman with the Alabaster Jar, and she talks about Mary Magdalene being Jesus's bride. Together they are the archetypal divine couple, the archetypal bride and groom. And, and I think that's what's attractive to a lot of Christians, too, because they realize, well, they don't have to give up Jesus. And now they can have Mary Magdalene not as a prostitute, not as someone who has to be ashamed of her sexuality, but a wife, a mother, full of the potency of life and that potential. And, again, it's bringing wholeness to the women who had to be ashamed of their sexuality. And, it's bringing balance to the male and the female, together as one. And it just calls to mind that we need each other. We shouldn't be having gender wars. We should be looking at each other with equality. But unfortunately, we don't. Women are still second-class citizens in most of the world, even here in the United States. And, Barbara Walker, who has long talked about this and written tons of books, I love her analogy. She said, women growing up in patriarchal society are like birds who have spent their entire life in a cage, and they don't know that it's not normal. They have been in this cage, and they think that's the way birds spend their lives. And I thought that was a beautiful picture, to sort of hold as an example of, women who have really been captive by this patriarchal society that's kept them second-class citizens.
Well, Obama, I believe, today just passed that, was that the Barbara Walker law that he passed through?
I forget the name of the woman, but it was a law that enables women to have more time and gives them a little bit more leverage or something to bring a lawsuit if they think they've been discriminated against in the workplace.
Right.
Because there is sexism out there. I mean, look, during the campaign, you didn't see it, but you heard about it if you looked, read the blogs. And at Hillary's campaigns, people, sexist people were holding up signs that said, "Iron my shirts." Well, you don't see "Shine my shoes" at the Obama campaign or at the McCain campaign.
Wow.
So yeah, there's a lot of sexism out there, and I'm not even sure a lot of men recognize it as such. They just think it's normal. And coming from the South, I'm telling you, there's still men who believe women ought to be barefoot and pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mean to be offensive, but I'm just trying to be candid.
Now, this is my thought, okay? We're living in the third dimension, and we're looking forward to ascending into the fifth dimension. Am I correct? It's in the ascension process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fourth dimension, all right, that no one speaks about, okay, we're just skipping that right over, from third to fifth. And I think the reason we don't really speak about the fourth is because it is, this is where this is where the division took place. This is where the veil began. Is because the fourth dimension that we think of as a fourth dimension is actually the reality we're really in today, but there has been like a split, a veil put in between the two, creating two separate dimensions.
Okay.
And so what happens is this veil is becoming thinner.
Mm.
And as the veil drops, and I think it when we hit a critical mass point in our thinking, this veil will drop. And I think when that veil drops, then the two realities come together as one. And that is that begins the bridal chamber, or that will be the bridal chamber.
I'm not,
which will end up as the fifth dimension.
Well, I've never heard it explained that way.
Well, of course, that's because I'm explaining it now. I have a strange way of looking at things.
Well, that's okay. No, it makes sense. I mean, it's a good metaphor. Some people are talking about it's like, you know, moving out of the age of Pisces and into the age of Aquarius, mm-hmm. where we want to be more related. In other words, we are our brother's keeper. We are our sister's keeper. It's not the survival of the fittest. Well, if you can't make it, you know, poo on you, you know. It's you know, we are responsible for one another. We want to uplift humanity. Let all the boats float, mm-hmm. not just a few boats float while everybody else sinks down in the muck.
Do you remember there's been ancient stories about how the bride went into hiding?
Well, there are stories of the goddess who, not necessarily brides, but where the goddess would go underworld or go into the cave, right. because she was in despair or upset.
But I think, that is where this so-called fourth dimension is.
I see.
This
okay.
is where the veil is. The bridal veil, let's say. The veil that separates us from the third and the fourth.
And
she's into hiding now into this world of shadows, which is where, you know, like all these interdimensional entities today hide, you know, in the infrared zone. We pick them up in the infrared zone. But anyhow, there's this what I call the invisible world that's all around us, and it's filled with all these entities that live among us, but unknown to us, demons and angels and fairies and, you know, various things like that.
Right.
But when you read the old stories about how the bride went into hiding. I've often felt that this is where she went, is into this shadow world, and this fails at this point of time is there, and because until this veil is lifted, you know, through our a change of thought,
mm-hmm.
Of what our reality is. Once this breaks down, then that veil breaks down too, and this world will be open to us. And when that veil, when that world opens to us, that's when the bride and the groom once again reunite.
Right.
And we are there. Then in that dimension, the will end up as a fifth dimension.
Well, I hope
a higher
we see it
dimension.
In our lifetime. I think
what it is it's breaking down now, and I think that this will be totally broke down by 2012. So I think that we're right there now. People are already starting to see like shadowy beings in the corners of their eyes, you know, and picking up thoughts, you know, from this other world. You know, it seems like communications are already starting to seep through to us and to awaken us.
Well, that's hopeful. That's a great message of hope. I've often thought this idea of 2012 being the end. I've really thought it's really just maybe the end of patriarchy, and it's the start of something new and hopefully better.
Yeah, the bridal, yeah.
Yeah, much yeah. like the death card in the tarot. You know, it's not about a literal death. It's about one thing ending and something else beginning.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, it really can't be the end because that's not how cycles work. And 2012 will just begin the age of Aquarius. So nothing can end until the cycles finish.
Well, I can't wait.
Yeah, and of course the age of Aquarius is supposed to be, when the two energies come together as one, and we live in an age of peace and hope. And
hopefully more enlightenment.
Enlightenment.
Yeah. Because, you know, we see the sacred feminine as sort of like the poster girl for not just social justice, but diversity, tolerance. And I think because of her many faces across continents and cultures, she can be this big umbrella that lots of people can get under, shoulder to shoulder, in find common ground, unlike the patriarchal religions that are always fighting one another. They're always saying, I'm better than you, crusades, fatwas, inquisitions, you know, that sort of thing. You know, Goddess doesn't say that. And, you know, she's the mother. She's the creator. You know, she embraces and loves all her children. And, you know, and I think it's great that we don't have one goddess Bible, you know, because this way people can, you know, can be individualists. You know, they can see her as they want to see her and experience her. You know, they don't have to turn to some, you know, some hierarchical institution to tell them exactly what to think and, you know, how to be and, you know, this, you know, these boxes that people put themselves in.
Exactly. Okay. Here's a comment from Chicago again. Last week, Sheldon Neidel. We had a show with Sheldon Neidel last week, so this is what he's referring to. Last week, Sheldon Neidel defined one aspect of our ascension as gaining access to perfection, of that which Mary alluded to being like what the shamans believe, to live in both the physical and spirit at the same time. Another, and Dwayne wrote in about that the huge celestial eclipse, they're talking about now on the internet.
That's supposed to happen in 2012?
Yeah, uh-huh. 2012 also, they have the celestial eclipse. Yeah. And, yeah.
Well, I think we're seeing these shifts in all different phases of our lives. You know, it's coming, you know, astrologically, it's coming in our subconscious, you know, it's happening everywhere, you know, in the workplace. I mean, it's happening in churches, it's happening in the political arena. I mean, there's so many people from so many different walks of life. They're not just Wiccan or pagan or progressive Christians either. You know, they're Sioux Lakota and they're Buddhists and they're you know, they're mystics, they're people who don't even claim to be a particular spirituality. You know, they're all sort of, you know, coming to this, these same sorts of ideas. It's, I liken it to like, you know, tipping points or a paradigm shift that, you know, people have written about. And, you know, and it only takes a certain percentage of people to, you know, to shift things and tip things into a, you know, into a new way of thinking and being and doing. And, you know, and I think the way we're coming out talking against greed and against this uber consumerism, you know, I think this is all part of it too, you know, because that plays into the idea of this, you know, this world can't just be, you know, the playground for the rich and the influential. It's for everybody. And what we're seeing with happened on Wall Street is just insane. And, you know, I was so glad to see Obama came out and chastised, you know, these guys today. And, I mean, you know, so many people have been privileged for so long while other people have gone to bed hungry at night. You know, it's just that disproportion is, you know, those kinds of things. I don't think humanity wants to tolerate that anymore.
Well, it's like a sliver. You know, it had the infection, it all has to go through that process before the sliver can come out. You know, or a boil or something. It has to pop in order for, you know, it to heal. And that, I think, is what's going on right now, is everything's being brought up to the surface.
Yeah.
So it can be cleansed, you know, and then once it's cleansed and taken care of, then it'll heal.
Yeah, and well, and I'm a, you know, I seriously hope that, you know, there's accountability with the last administration so that we can, you know, reclaim our standing in the world and, you know, our ideals will mean something again. I mean, and that's the transparency too. That's the purging and the cleansing and the,
right,
you know,
purging was the word I was looking for.
Yeah, and you know, put it all, lay it all out there in the light of day, you know, so that the sun, you know, purges it, you know, with clarity, so that, you know, everybody will know what happened, so these sorts of things can never happen again. You know, we really just need to have dialogue in this country about honesty and decency again, and I think we lost that. I really do.
Rebecca writes, and I think though that we all have to do our own part of that healing process, not relying on our president or government to do it for us.
I agree with her. I really do. I think we all have to take some responsibility. We can't be apathetic. We can't wait for somebody else to do it. We have to clean up our own lives and live the best life we can live. And, you know, have solid, valuable ideals that we live by and care about one another and take care of one another. And it doesn't just mean ourselves and our family. It means, you know, the genocide that's happening in Africa or the war that's in another country. You know, I think we really have to start thinking as a global human family, not it's us or them.
Exactly. Out of Chicago again, how does twin flames or soulmates play into all of this?
Well,
that's a tough question.
Yeah. Well,
but
good
question.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think soulmates. You know, if you're talking about two people who find each other and they're perfect for one another, I think that's probably the ultimate divine couple. I guess you could probably look at it like that.
Twin flames would be, but now twin flames would actually be the male and feminine coming together as one.
I would think so. It makes sense to me.
Because we would have two sides of us.
Yes, and we do.
And those two have actually been separated. And now we're coming together, the twin flames are coming together again as one, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, because you look at it from a psychological perspective. You know, women were taught, oh, be nice, make everything right, and in other words, don't set boundaries. You know, don't say no, don't be assertive, that's not ladylike. Well, that's suppressing their masculine. Okay? And men are taught, oh, they can't be nurturing, they can't be compassionate, otherwise they're weak. Well, that's suppressing their feminine, you know? And so I think we all have to be able to find a place of wholeness and to be able to embrace all these ideas. So it's almost like letting the twin flames within ourselves both fan both those flames within ourselves. You know, don't suppress one or the other. You know, we all have masculine and feminine within us, and we need both. We need both for balance.
Many times I hear people saying that they're out there looking for their soulmate, or they feel that in another life they had this love, and they keep looking for it wherever they go, and they can never quite find it, you know, here in this life. And I think what they're actually looking for, you know, when they feel that desire to find that soulmate, is they're looking for their split.
Mm.
You know, they're like, for a woman, they're looking, the true love that they're really searching for is not as a lover as they think, but it's of their male self.
Mm.
And the male that's out there looking for that twin, that soulmate, is actually longing for their feminine self. And, you know, my thought on it anyhow.
It may very well be. I mean, you know, so many of us, you know, at different times during our life, we have this emptiness, maybe this feeling of being incomplete. And, you know, we think another person is going to solve that.
Well, we've been conditioned for that.
Yes.
Because we haven't been told about our two selves, mm-hmm. you know, our twin flame. So we look for it in a physical body.
Right.
Where actually it's a metaphysical.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, we really have to find out who we are. You know, whether it's the masculine or the feminine, you know, I think so often we end up playing these roles that maybe either society or our family has put us in. I think once we become our authentic self, whatever that is, if we can find that, you know, who we really are, what we think our purpose is, then I think that emptiness goes away.
Exactly. Love thyself.
Mm-hmm.
The Chicago brings up the fact that being a male, that he does not suppress his female.
Good.
And he wishes that girls would appreciate that about him. But you know what? To Chicago, we do. Speaking as girls, we do appreciate that.
Yes, I agree with you, Chicago. Women really do. If you're running into women that don't, look for a different kind of woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because you know we don't. You know, we want a guy who is going to be nurturing and compassionate and listen and be a friend to us. You know, if you're finding women who aren't like that, then I think maybe they're a little lost.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't value that, but, you know, they just haven't evolved enough.
Exactly. And the same way goes, you know, vice versa.
Yes, of course. Because we don't, women are just as confused as men. I mean, we're all just struggling on this earth to figure it all out.
Well, it goes back to what you had said about the bird in the cage. They only knew one life.
Yeah.
You know, and then once you get out of that cage, you know, then in the initial stage, you are very confused. You don't know where to go, what to expect.
Yeah, it's overwhelming, when
a
door opens.
And you start flying, and you see the bird flying into all the walls until, you know, bird finally gets its bearing, and then once it realizes it's free, off it goes, you know, and it can never be held again. And let's see, now you have on your website, again, KarenTate.com, you actually have a Divine Feminine fact sheet.
Yeah,
which
I do.
I think is great.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff there that people can go look at, just some quick ideas. You know, there's actually a study that the University of New York did, and I mentioned that on that fact sheet, that shows that one of the fastest growing spiritualities in the country, when you combine all the many different hybrids, they all have in common that they honor a goddess or a divine feminine or sacred feminine, whatever you want to call it. So, you know, I think that's really encouraging that, you know, in spite of the traditional, you know, the hold that the patriarchy, you know, has on us, you know, because it's affected our psyches for thousands of years, that, you know, we're breaking free. You know, we're like that little bird in the cage, and that door is cracking open for more and more of us.
Yeah, and there was a... There was a book that you had in here that I was, The Bible's Lost Stories, under sources, on your fact sheet. A lot of times what you can do is just go to a library and you'll find books on the lost stories of the Bible. You know,
yeah, I mean,
there are so many different ones, you know, all that have not been put into our standard Bible that talks about the feminine,
Exactly. Well, you know, the reality is, I mean, I have a little YouTube clip that people can play on if they go to my website, and it's called Sex, Power, and Politics of the Sacred Feminine. And the reality is that, you know, this whole idea of goddess got swept under the rug, and, you know, it was forgotten about, and, you know, all of these things that, you know, that we're talking about that happened that so many people aren't even aware of, this was all about power and control. And if you really look and you study, you see that, you know, a lot of these gospels and things that didn't make the Bible, it's because it didn't play forward that male superiority agenda. You know, in fact, there are some books of the Bible, some books of Genesis, that have Adam and Eve created at the same time, rather than, you know, Adam was first and he was in God's image, and then, you know, the woman comes from his rib or something like that. You know, there were other stories of creation, but, you know, people don't all know that. You know, they take the Bible as the Word of God, and it's really just man-made dogma. It's mythology, just like other creation stories of other religions.
You have an interesting article that you wrote, Are We Witnessing a Paradigm Shift?
Oh, I love, you know, I that's one of the more recent ones I've put on there, and I would really encourage listeners to go click on it, because I was really looking at between, I think it was September and November, and I, you know, I've been hearing about this paradigm shift for 20 years, you know, and I really started to think that the things I was starting to notice and what I put in that article, that we are actually seeing it. We are living it now. And so I cite, you know, these different examples. You know, they don't all seem related when you first look at it, but everything from the Austrian government issued a stamp honoring the Venus of Willendorf, the 30,000-year-old goddess of Neolithic times, or I forget, maybe it's Paleolithic. It's a little late tonight. I forget which one it is. But so here this Austrian government is honoring, you know, this ancient goddess. And we had, you know, out here in California, we had the stuff happen with Prop 8, you know, with gay rights didn't pass. And, you know, but the people are out and, you know, again, you know, this is an issue of equality, you know, and but we're seeing that, you know, they're not going to just take this laying down, and they see this, again, this patriarchal institution, the Mormon Church, fed thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, I don't know, it might even have been millions, I forget what the figure was, to help fight what was happening here in California, and they aren't even in California, you know. There's a lot of different things I talk about. I talk about Sarah Palin and Roy Bourgeois, this priest from Louisiana who is being excommunicated by the Vatican right now because he came out publicly and said the church is discriminating against women and sexism is a sin, and no matter how they want to phrase it, it's a sin, and women should be ordained. And, you know, all of these different things that are happening in all different corners of the world that are, you know, sort of pushing forward these ideas, you know, that all are what I call planks of the goddess platform.
In your article, Are We Witnessing a Shift in Consciousness? I just want to, there was like a short little introduction there. Just as Mother Nature swept in during Hurricane Katrina, exposing the sins of the Bush administration, irresponsible politicians, and greedy developers, perhaps Sophia was now holding up her mirror, reflecting to the masses the policies and deeds perpetuated at the highest echelon of power at a time when we might affect change. As I reflected on the period of about 8 weeks during the months of October and November 2008, I wondered if we were witnessing the first fragile waves of that long-awaited paradigm shift towards a new consciousness some of us call a feminine consciousness or ideals of the sacred feminine. And I will, I totally agree with you that Hurricane Katrina did expose it. I think 911 caused us to awaken from mm-hmm. a deep sleep,
mm-hmm.
and then that was the first wave, and then the second wave was the Hurricane Katrina.
Absolutely.
Which once we were awakened, then we were shown.
Yes.
And then the third wave was followed by the elections.
Yeah.
And where the people were given the choice of supporting an administration that served for the sake of power, or an administration that was serving for the sake of service.
Yeah.
Well, serving for the sake of power would have been the male, serving for the sake of service would have been the feminine.
Yeah.
You know, so through our voting of Obama, we brought back, as a collective consciousness, brought back the feminine. We chose to bring back the feminine energy at that point in time.
Well, and I think too,
in which Obama was actually a combination, actually, of both, because he's a male body, but carries the feminine consciousness, the energy.
Yeah. I mean, because I got into some heated discussions with some women here in Los Angeles about, well, why wasn't I supporting Hillary? Why was I supporting Obama? And I said, look, I would love to see a woman president, and I would not mind seeing Hillary as president, but look at what, look at that energy of Obama. You know, he is the one that's projecting the essence of the sacred feminine. Just because you're a female doesn't mean you're about the sacred feminine. Sarah Palin, case in point, you know.
I was going to bring her up next.
Yeah, it's not about our genitalia. You know, it's about how we are in the world. And some women are, you know, have that patriarchal mindset and are not tuned in to their own feminine. I mean, they really aren't. And we had heated discussions about Sarah Palin, too. I mean, because some women just didn't get it, that she, it doesn't mean any woman, you know. And all the things she stood for were the antithesis of the sacred feminine. And thank goddess she isn't a heartbeat away from the presidency. I mean, we thought Bush was bad. I mean, she would have just been somebody's puppet because, unfortunately, the woman's just not that bright.
Thank God for Saturday Night Live.
Oh, I know. I know. That comedian on Saturday Night Live, she probably helped save the country.
Oh, yeah. Who would have thought, huh?
Yeah, who would have thought? Well, and people like Jon Stewart, too. I mean, you know, that's where some people get their news. And fortunately, they can put things over in a way that's entertaining, but get the point across.
Rebecca writes in, Karen and Mary. Oops, somebody else wrote and changed my spot. Okay, I'm back to it. Rebecca writes in and asks, Karen and Mary, do you foresee that shortly there will be a need for more nurturing, tapping into the feminine? Are some people like light workers naturally prepared for difficult shifts? Will their roles become more prevalent soon?
I wouldn't doubt it. But I'm also one of these people that, I grew up learning about goddess spirituality, and I appreciate the idea of light worker. But I do want to, just sort of put out a different idea about the darkness. The darkness isn't always a bad thing, and I'm not talking about darkness in terms of evil or negativity. You know, I'm talking about darkness as like the potency of the dark soil, from which things grow. Our sleep state, that darkness, the womb, the darkness is where we draw sometimes our creativity from. Where sometimes we can go and be at rest to nurture ourselves, to gestate ideas. It's from where ideas grow. Maybe we're talking about two different things, but I don't always see the dark as a negative thing. But definitely, I agree with Rebecca. I think the world needs a lot of nurturing. If, light workers can raise people's awareness and, help us uplift ourselves, I think the more the better.
Yeah. So anyhow, you beat me to the punch on that. My next question was going to be women on Sarah Palin, but you kind of beat me to the punch on that. We had, I'm looking at some of your articles right now, but...
Well, there's another one there that I think is really good. I would tell listeners, if they like what we're talking about, to go read. It's called, I'm trying to remember the title. Maybe if you're looking at it, you can help me. It's about the rise of the feminine consciousness, a revolution in thought.
Okay.
It talks about why goddess spirituality it can be the salve that heals the humanity's ills. Why now? And it talks about all of the things that are happening in the world that that why we need it, and what a world would look like with the sacred feminine restored, and how do we get there from here? You know, so that's another interesting article that's, you know, that your listeners might want to read if they like this stuff.
Yeah, you also had one, because we just finished the winter solstice,
mm-hmm.
but you had winter solstice, religious tolerance.
Yeah, yeah. Well, some of those, all of those articles, I think where you're reading from right now are just important articles that I thought would help people educate themselves about things. The ones toward the top are mine, and some of these others are just links, you know, that people can go to that, you know, sort of give them a new awareness, you know, just help them understand what this is all about. But certainly, you know, tolerance is, you know, is an important thing that we all develop, and I believe that the sacred feminine is part of that umbrella under which tolerance is a quality that, you know, we all want to strive for.
Uh-huh, right. And now people can go to your website at KarenTate.com.
Yes.
They can also listen to your radio shows.
Yes, and they can, if they go to the website, it gives links how to access the radio show. They can listen live on Wednesday nights, or they can just download things from the archives. The website also has, if I'm going to be doing some tours soon and giving some classes.
Oh, your tours, what do you mean? Oh.
Sacred
tours. I'm interested in that, because we're going to be doing sacred tours, too, so I'm always interested in other people,
okay.
So what they're doing.
Well, I just got back from leading a tour in October, and we decided to take a break in 2009 with the economy being so bad, but we're going to plan a tour for 2010, you know, to give people time to put money together, and we're actually discussing the destination right now. It's either going to be Turkey again, which is an incredible country to see goddess sites. The temples of the goddess there are just innumerable and incredible. Or we may go to Egypt, and somebody's trying to talk me into Scotland. So it'll probably be one of those countries.
I've always been find Cappadocia fascinating.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so
Turkey.
You've been to Turkey.
No, but that is one place that if I did a sacred site tour, that's where I would like to go because of the underworld of Cappadocia.
Yes, yes. The first time I went to Turkey, we went to Cappadocia. And it is, it's surreal. It's like this, this landscape that... it's otherworldly.
Yeah, that would be a good way of describing it. Because there's all because most people are not familiar with the underworld.
No,
you know that there are huge cities right underneath our own feet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like most of them here in North America have been sealed. You know, so it's very difficult to find the tunnel systems that lead into the inner or into these underground cities. But in Turkey, they're still accessible, especially there in Cappadocia.
Well, or even in a lot of the cities in Western Europe, you know, our modern cities are just built right on top of the ancient cities.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are different access places that you can go down underneath, you know, and find part of ancient Rome, you know, part of Gallo-Roman London. It's incredible. I mean, it's just incredible.
I mean, the history is right there beneath our feet.
Literally.
You know, all this hidden, you know, history, you know, that it's been forbidden for us to know about even, but or for them to teach us.
Yeah.
You know, and you go down in there and, you know, it's like, oh my gosh.
I think that's...
And of course, there in Turkey, don't they have the fairy towers there too?
Yeah, I think that's in Cappadocia as well. But you raise a good point. You know, I think we have to really be responsible for our own educations, because if we wait for somebody else to teach us, we might only hear one person's agenda or one person's point of view. And I realized if I had stayed in New Orleans, I might never have known about any of this, and that makes me really mad.
What brought on your sacred site tours, as far as you, your passion to start these tours, and to go out there and start exposing truths that have been hidden from us for so long?
Well, you know, when I moved to California, and I always had a passion for travel, so basically what I did was I married my passion for travel mm-hmm. with this newfound interest in goddess spirituality, and I guess you could probably say my anger at feeling so duped. And what I wanted to do was go to these sacred places, you know, go see how these other cultures lived, see these ancient civilizations, these archaeological sites, see them for myself, and it really sort of validated goddess for me. I mean, it validated this newfound spirituality, because when you're standing at one of these ancient temples, that's just humongous. I mean, it might take three people, you know, standing around in a circle just to go around the circumference of one column, and you have 60 of those columns, and that humongous temple was built to honor goddess. It's really plain to you how important she once was in the world and what we've lost. And so it helped me validate the spirituality. It took it from just being in a book to being reality, you know, if that makes sense.
Oh, it does. I was just imagining that, you know, how that must have felt to stand there and see it instead of just looking at it in a book. Because even in a book, it's awesome.
Yeah,
just to stand there and
there's also
absorb it.
The energetic of the sacred site, and a lot mm-hmm. of times, you know, there's that magical aspect to some of these places. And I think it made such an impression on me that I started trying to organize sacred goddess tours to take other people so they could have this same experience. It was really my way of being in service, because, believe me, we weren't making any money doing it. It was just a matter of I was trying to help facilitate other people's experience because it made such an impact on my life. And then I was fortunate enough at the time, travel was cheap, not like it is today, and I was a part-time travel agent, so it made it more affordable. And I just thank goddess that I was able to do it, because I wouldn't be able to do it today with the way things cost and the way the travel industry's changed. So that's how it all came to be. I discovered goddess when I moved to California, and once I discovered her, well, that just gave me a focus for my travel.
The people of the United States, because what I'm bringing up is most of the monuments, temples, pyramids, and have been destroyed. Artifacts have been destroyed here in North America. For some reason, they wanted to just sweep this continent this nation clean of any evidence that there was anything of the ancient ones here. And so we've been left with without a history, a true history, because they replaced the true history with a fallacy of what North America really was. And so we're a people without roots, without history.
That's so true.
And we're so isolated from the rest of the world.
It feels like we're orphans, doesn't it?
Yeah, we are, basically, because of the fact that we don't know what our... Every other country knows their roots except for the people here in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of us can't track our family history or...
Well, they'll send it off to... Or they'll take our family history and send it off to Africa. They'll send it off to the Middle East, to Europe, you know, or they'll say that we crossed over the Bering Straits, you know, but to give any credit as our roots actually originating here in North America, I mean, it's just like... Oh, you know, they don't even want to speak about that.
Or if they find some sort of artifact that doesn't fit in with the traditional view of the timeline or history, then it's swept under the rug. You know, they're called out of place artifacts.
Right.
And in my first book, Sacred Places of Goddess, I actually suggest that we rethink and reclaim, especially here in the United States, because we don't have these archaeological sites and temples from ancient times, that we look around and rethink and reclaim sites and name them just like ancient people did. You know, we give ourselves permission to name different places sacred sites of goddess, and one of the places I suggested was the Grand Canyon for a lot of different reasons, which you can read in my book. But to go back, but to tie into this out of place artifacts thing, I mention in there that there was actually an article written, I think, in the 1920s about Egyptian artifacts being found in a cave in in the Grand Canyon. And that, I have to tell you, that just piqued my curiosity. And then when you read the rest of the stuff I discovered about the Grand Canyon, you know, astrologically and all of this other stuff, it really makes you wonder what we don't know about the history of the North American continent.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've often wondered if North America wasn't actually the motherland, you know, but... Because we found, about an hour's drive from here is a place called Rock Lake. It's over by Lake Mills, and they found underwater pyramids there.
Wow!
That predate the Egyptian pyramids.
Wow! I hope somebody writes an article.
Frank Joseph. He wrote several books on the underwater pyramids of Rock Lake.
Oh.
And. And then outside of Burlington here, we found a civilization that we were able to date through cut marks on mammoth bones. Apparently, they were hunting the mammoth and then butchering them. So it'd be like cut marks on the bones, and the scientists were able to date those to 14,000, I think it's like 14,500 BC.
Know,
and of course the latest they've been able to date the pyramids is 10,500 BC.
Well, you know, so. I think we had civilizations long before traditional archaeology is willing to admit.
I have this book. It's a very, very old book. And I was down in Kentucky, and this gentleman gave me the book, and he had picked it up at a yard sale, so he paid like 35 cents for it. But it was written by the Smithsonian, and of course, you'd never be able to get that book from them today. But anyhow, in there, they have pictures, and they were writing on... mammoths being used in Kentucky that they had domesticated the mammoth and actually used them, you know, like how they use the elephants, to do their work, their heavy-duty work, and to plow fields and to ride.
Wow.
And these were mammoths.
Wow.
Yeah. and I mean, try finding that in your history books, right?
Well, you see, that's the whole point. You know, I think that's why, in a way, I was always drawn to these ancient, older cultures, because I just had this intuitive feeling that they knew so much more. You know, that that we will never begin to touch their knowledge of the ancient world. I think we've been lost. You know, there's been so much lost to us. And I don't know, that just disturbs me. I want to know the answers to everything.
and this is where the feminine consciousness comes in too, through self empowerment, encouraging people to, instead of just going to books or going to another person and asking the questions, we all need to take personal responsibility in pulling up our shirt sleeves and actually digging in ourselves and becoming our own investigators.
Yeah.
And finding the answers.
Yeah.
Whether it be paranormal, metaphysical, historical, spiritual, whatever. We all need to start getting in there and getting these answers, because the old ways, the people of the old ways, they never have given it to us, and they never will unless they're forced into it. And the only ones that are actually going to be able to force them into it is all of us getting together and getting our own answers and putting them up on our websites, writing our books. And then, after a while, they're going to have to come out with this information. Otherwise, they're going to look like idiots.
Well, you know the expression, knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say it, excuse me, my voice is getting a little funny. I hate to say it, but I think sometimes, you know, money isn't being put into the public school system and stuff like that because they want us to be, you know, they don't want us to be very smart. Because
right.
if we're smart, we're going to question and we're going to challenge the people in power, and that's the last thing they want.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So what we have to do is challenge them, and the thing is, we don't even need to rely on them anymore, because I think that this is where our new consciousness is taking us. Instead of depending on others for the answers, we're becoming self-empowered, and we're looking for the answers ourselves.
Well, and then we're
sharing those answers with our people of kindred spirits, of like minds.
And I think another important part of it is we are given ourselves permission. Not just to do this research and find our answers, but we don't need some authority to tell us, yeah, you're right, mm-hmm. or it's okay. You know, it's like we're willing to color outside the lines now. And, you know, we don't have to, you know, have patriarchy or academia or somebody else to pat us on the head and say, you know, I approve of your findings.
Exactly. Exactly.
We don't need their validation.
No, we don't. We really don't. That's an excellent point. And anyhow, everyone, this is BurlingtonNews.net, BUFO Radio. I'm Mary Sutherland, and we're speaking tonight with Karen Tate. And you can find Karen at her website, KarenTate.com. That's KarenTate.com. And our time is up, and we're going to go easy on Karen because we know that she's suffering a little bit from laryngitis tonight, and she's been kind of going through a little bit, root canals and laryngitis, so she's had a rough week.
But I'm getting better.
You're getting better. Well, let's hope so. Okay.
Well, thank you, Mary. I've had a wonderful time, and thank your listeners who offered such thoughtful questions and added to the show.
We'll be keeping the chat room open after the program, so all of you that's in there will be able to discuss this show tonight. Now, you're going to be able, if you never caught the entire show, you'll be able to listen to this show on our 24/7 live stream. You can find the URL for that at BurlingtonNews.net. Well, there will also be an on-demand show at BurlingtonNews.net where there will be like a quick little blurb about Karen Tate, and then it'll just say to listen to the show, click here. So, and that will be up as well. So there's various ways that you'll be able to hear this interview for the next several weeks at least. Then afterwards, they go into our archived programs that can be found on our membership site. And we encourage you all to subscribe to BUFO Radio. And right at this point in time, it's only $20 for the year, so it's not very much, but, all those little $20 checks all add up, and that helps pay for our websites and keeps these radio stations going. So, we really appreciate a subscription to BUFO Radio. And, of course, you can go to BurlingtonNews.net to get a subscription. There's a link right there of how to subscribe. So, anyhow, and then once you subscribe, you'll be able to go into 5 years' worth of archive shows, and Karen Tate will be one of them. So, anyhow, thank you so much, Karen, for being here on our show tonight. And
very welcome.
And it was an excellent show, and we've learned a lot from you tonight.
Well, thank you very much.
And I hope to be on your show soon.
Oh, absolutely. Let's email, and we'll get that arranged. We'll get a date.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.